Okay, I'm going to hit star 5 so that people will be muted in general because, like I said, it was requested and suggested by the powers that be to make this recording come out a little bit better and safer. I'm sorry if you want to... You can unmute yourself by hitting star 6 at any time when you want to comment or... call and, you know, ask a question on that's directly related to something that I'm saying. If you do have a point that you want to make that you think is not related to what I'm talking about directly but indirectly, I'm going to ask you to please use your best judgment in that, and I trust you. I'm not going to have to do that because we're free here, and I want to keep it free and open. I got to trust God that he's going to make this call turn out the way that it should be, with and without interruptions. All I can do is take the steps that I can, and the rest is in his hands. I consider this call something special, because again, It's for Guard Your Eyes officially, and it's an open crowd, so anybody could be listening. The PIN number is available online. Your wife could be listening. Your husband, if you're a woman, could be listening. The newspaper could be listening. You know, anybody could be recording this and listening. There are many Goyim on Guard Your Eyes who I personally know, actually quite a few who read, you know, the forum and are very interested and sympathetic and benefit a lot from Guard Your Eyes, who I'm in contact with on an irregular basis. And just like there are in SA, you know, which is mostly not Jews, but very popular among Jews for one reason or another, which we're going to cover later, I hope, in some way. You know, God's running the show, and it's really an unbelievable thing. One of the unbelievable things to me that occurs to me every now and then is that for myself, I'm in contact with many guys on the phone for recovery purposes. I'm in contact with a lot of guys on the phone, a lot of people on the phone. I'm on the phone like all day. You know, I have a full-time job. I have a family. I'm a Jew. I'm trying to learn and be, you know, a good boy. But I get a lot of calls and talk a lot on the phone. And phone sex was one of the biggest things that I, one of the biggest drugs for me was phone sex. Well, is phone sex. When I act out, I use phone sex very, very heavily. And here I am, sober, thank God, for 18 years, using the phone for recovery. Now, I want to say, using the phone for recovery in a huge way. Now, I want to point out that I believe, and this is very dear to my heart, I believe that if for 1 second I would try to use the phone l'shem tikkun of my addiction, to purposely use the phone for recovery, so that it should be a tikkun from all the phone sex and stuff that I did using my phone in addiction, I would flush my sobriety and recovery down the toilet within a matter of weeks. That would ruin the entire thing because I'm just sitting myself again on the seat in charge of being misaking myself, and it's a glorious battle against the Yetzer Hara all over again, or call it something else. It's a glorious battle against my ugliness and lust and blah, blah, blah. You know, and here I am at the forefront, a soldier who's like doing it, and I'm Dafka being Misake, and I'm using the Yetzer Hara's thing against him, and the whole thing would just get flushed down the toilet in a matter of weeks. It would become a complete ego thing. As religious and frum and emesdik emunah that I have, that would be a huge error, and I pray to the Rabbanu Shalom to please save me from those dafka, from those kind of errors, from errors. If there is a Yetzer Hara that's the most dangerous, it's the one that dresses up in the garb of the Rabbanon, which, as the Gemara says, that's the worst. and that's mine, you know, and I don't want to go down that path, you know. But look what God has done. I can appreciate what God has done. Not once did I intend on being misaken what I did in all my years of acting out, and what I do whenever I act out. And again, I'm stressing, I'm sober. But were I to act out today, I know what I would do, because I know what I do when I act out. I haven't forgotten what it's like to be a crazy addict. I haven't forgotten for a minute. I remember what it's like, okay? And I admit, this is my weakness. If I felt that, oh, porn, that's behind me, then I would enjoy porn like a normal human being can enjoy porn, just like a normal human being can enjoy alcohol. You know, a normal human being can get drunk on Purim. An alcoholic can't get drunk on Purim. An alcoholic can't get drunk ever. Because if you're in recovery, you can't drink alcohol because you know that you're powerless over alcohol. I am powerless over porn. Porn is lust. You know, for me, porn is just pure. It's a drug of lust. If I partake, my entire chemistry, my entire way of seeing things changes, and I change as a result. My priorities change immediately. It's quite amazing to see, and I've seen it start happening many, many times over the years. Looking at some thing and then thinking, an idea comes to my mind that, well, I should probably check it out, and I feel inside, right under the surface, that were I to check it out, my entire priorities would change, and suddenly, like it always did all the years that I acted out, I would feel deep in my heart, my Jewish heart, I would feel deep in my heart that this naked lady, this image of her, is the most precious and important thing I could possibly do. It's essential to me. I must look at it. People call it a desire, a yetzirah, this. It's all BS. This is what you feel right now is the most precious, beautiful, and important thing. That's my problem as an addict, not as a Jew, as an addict. And that is what I cannot go to. I can't afford to go to schmutz at all because I know what it does to me. It just changes me, and I'm not going back to being a fake person. You know, I can't tolerate that pain anymore. I've tasted what integrity is. I'm not going back to there with God's help. And I need God's help because I know my judgment is very, very poor. And there's no such thing as, oh, you're so strong. I'm not strong. My judgment is poor and I'm weak. That's the truth. And I'm sober. You know, I've tasted integrity and I love it. I don't want to go back to that old life, but that is not enough to keep me sober. Only God can do this because it's a miracle. And I'll describe little bits of my story as we go on, but I'm not going to go through all the details here because, like I said, this is, number one, this is being recorded. Number two, anyone could be listening to this because this PIN number is available online to anyone who goes on the website. So I'm not going to get too detailed in my stuff, and there are other reasons as well. Namely, most people who have these problems are not addicts, and I don't want non-addicts to be involved in a lot of these things. Some of the details probably wouldn't be healthy for them to really even think about. Getting back to the thing I wanted to say, I want to do a short overview of the 12 steps like I did yesterday. But after one, a lot of people had to get off after one. I'm going to try to end today around 1. the short overview I did was around 1:15. So I want to just do that overview in a schematic, functional way. Look at the steps. This is very different than I keep hearing from other people, and that's why I feel like it's important for me to say this is the crux of the entire way that I look at the program and how it works for me and how it works for the people that I know. The other stuff is really details, but this is really the schematic diagram of the functional way that the steps works for me. in brief, I talked about each step yesterday, so I'm going to use shorthand and refer to the steps by number today and throughout the rest of the calls, okay? So please bear with me. If you have a question about what each step is, just, you know, open up the book, any of the 12-step books, and you'll see the steps there. So sometimes I'll say them, sometimes I'll just refer to them. Step one, we're going to talk about in a lot more detail after the schematic thing is over. Bezer Hashem, I'm going to focus on what step one means to me on different levels and to the people that I know in recovery. And that's basically admitting to myself that I'm ill. I'm unlike other people. Other people can use porn and enjoy it, whether they're frum Jews or not. A frum Jew can enjoy porn. The Rambam says that beferish. The Rambam says, and you can quote me on this, everybody is free to sin or to be a tzaddik or to be a rasha. In other words, Hashem gives you permission to look at porn. Hashem gives you permission to do all the averis you want. You are free. Hashem allows it. Hashem doesn't not allow it. If God didn't allow it, it couldn't happen. Hashem doesn't not allow it. He just tells you, don't do it. It's bad for you. Okay? It's bad for our relationship. It destroys, you know? As the Bala Tanya explains, usser means to be tied. It connects you into something that you shouldn't be connected into, you know? And other tzaddikim explain, you know, the Ramchal, you know, the damage of sins and all this stuff. But he doesn't say you can't. He says you can, of course. Of course you can do this. So a frum Jew is allowed to sin in any way. He chooses to sin, or she chooses to sin. An addict is not. An addict destroys his life. An addict becomes miserable. The one time that I know I'm the most miserable is when I'm lusting. You know, a frum Jew, a normal Jew, can sin and do tshuva, okay? And he can actually be on a good path after that. An addict cannot do that. If an addict drinks, if an addict takes in lust and, you know, to enjoy it purposely, he or she ends up completely screwed up, you know? We end up going way farther than we thought we would go, violating boundaries. Everybody around us becomes a pain in the, you know, tuchus, excuse me. Or if you're married, you know, getting married doesn't solve your problem. Getting married just means that now when you're lusting, your wife is a pain in the neck. You just, okay, Chanala, all right, okay, oh yes, I'll be there, okay, click. Okay, now back to my computer, you know. Your kids, pain in the neck. Priorities are very, very different when I start acting out, when I start lusting. So no matter how much tshuva, I remember going to the mikvah, I went to the mikvah, I did the tikkun klali, I cried, I this, I that, you know, crying through the lechadodi and everything, and I'm never going to go back, I'm never, never going to go back, and then I go back. So it's like, you know, tshuva does not work for addicts, period. And I don't mean, well, it's not a proper tshuva, no, tshuva, period. You're sick in the head. Tshuva is not going to work for you. What you need is to stop. That's number one. And number two, you need to start going on a way of living that makes it unnecessary. You know, it doesn't make it usser and convince you not to. It just makes it unnecessary. So there's two things. Step one, which says, I'm sick. I can't afford to do this anymore. And I'm willing to quit. You know, I'm willing to really admit that I cannot afford to do this anymore. Problem is, I lack sanity. So even though I know that I can't afford to do it anymore, I lack sanity. And therefore, I do things that I feel like I can't afford to do. So step two says, boy, do I need sanity. I lack sanity. Well, other areas of my life, I might lack sanity as well. You know, you don't have a person who's completely sane in every area but one. Chances are there's something off with me in a number of areas. So in step two, we do exercises for that. There are a lot of people do. mainly we list people, places, or things that I give my power away to. In other words, like, for example, one guy told me, if you feel like you have to lie to someone, you've given them way too much power already. Okay. Step two is very simple. I need sanity. My problem is I have insanity. I'm not sound, as the dictionary would define it. The second part of the first step is my life has become unmanageable. It doesn't say my drinking, my sex, my sexuality has become unmanageable. It doesn't say that. Step one says I'm powerless over the drug. In other words, I can't use it the way normal people can, and my life has become unmanageable. Not my drinking has become unmanageable again. So the second step is really saying I need sanity so that my life can be manageable again somehow. It's not going to work without some sanity. And I can't provide myself with sanity, so I need a power greater than myself, which could be a psychiatrist, it could be a psychologist, it could be this program, it could be God, it could be a friend, it could be anybody. But I need a power greater than myself that I feel has proven to me that it could restore me to sanity. Okay. Why do I need sanity? Not just so that I'm sober, but so that my life can become manageable again. If the only thing that's unmanageable in my life is my drinking, then I don't understand the truth. Then I don't have a clear picture of my life yet. And that's okay. In recovery, we'll hopefully get a much clearer picture of the reality about ourselves, and we'll realize how unmanageable our lives really are. But many of us have come to see that their lives are unmanageable, not just their drinking or acting out sexually. The third step then says, okay, so I've got a power greater than myself that can restore me to sanity. Maybe it's God. Okay, fine. I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to, not to God, to the care of God, to God's care. I'm putting myself into God's care. Okay? That's what the third step says. Not that I'm going to listen to what God says. It doesn't say that. It doesn't say I'm going to keep the Torah and the mitzvahs. It just says I'm going to put myself into God's care. Now, if you're truly putting yourself into God's care, you're certainly going to be very concerned about what he says he wants you to do. But that's not what the third step is really about. What the third step is about is putting myself in God's care. That's the main thing. Am I really in God's care? There's a chazal that says beferish. It's in Medrash Rabbah in Vayikra. Rabim machovim la Russia. Russia has many tzaras. Habateh Hashem chesed yisov avenu. Somebody who has bitachon in Hashem, he's a bateh Hashem chesed yisov avenu. Only chesed surrounds him. Chesed surrounds him. He's surrounded by chesed. Even though Rabim machovim la Russia, and the chazal there ask, why does it say Russia, similar to the question people ask in the Pesach Haggadah, why does it say Russia and Boteach Hashem? Why doesn't it say Russia and Tzadik? You know? So the Medrash answers, Afilu Russia u Boteach Hashem, Chesed Yisov Avenu. Because even if he's a Russia, and he has bitachon in the Ribbono Shel Olam, in other words, he puts himself into Hashem's care. He trusts God. Just trust God. God will take better care of me. You know? Trust him. Then Chesed Yisov Avenu. He'll be surrounded by Chesed even though he's still a Russia. Rabbi Moshe Vali, one of the closest Talmidim of the Ramchal, has an Arichas. If you find his Pirush on Tehillim, Lamed Gimel, I think is where the Pasuk is, you'll find his Pirush on that Pasuk explaining why it is that for a Russia, Chesed Yisov Avenu, if he has Bitachon in Hashem, if you like sources, you got it. Okay, fine. Obviously, somebody who has Bitachon Hashem is eventually going to be on the path of becoming not a Russia, too, but that's not the point of this chazal. And that's what happens in the third step. We trust God, And the more honest you get in your trust, the closer you're going to get to being good, obviously. But that's not, again, that's not the point of the third step. Now, once a person has complete trust in God, if a person decides to give themselves over into God's hands, that he trusts God, that God will take better care of me than I could possibly have taken care of myself, as I proved in my first step, you know, and as I know that I don't, that I'm lacking the ikkar, I'm lacking in sanity, so in sound thinking, you know, as the dictionary would define it, and a person can't take himself out of prison. So I trust God that God's going to take care of me. Fine. How in the heck does a person really, really get to trust God completely with his life? How is that possible? You know? So we'll talk about that in the third step a little bit. I mean, a lot. But if you really, really trusted God with your whole life, you put yourself in God's care, okay, then what would worry you in life? Would you be afraid of dying? You know, I don't think so. Would you be afraid of living? I don't think so. You know, when someone cuts you off on the highway, would you be upset about it? Really? Would it? You might be upset a little bit about it, but would it really bother you? No, because you would know inside, not just say to yourself. If you have to say it to yourself, then you don't really know it. But you would know inside your gut. But you would know. I mean, if you had to say to yourself, "Well, I trust Hashem," then you don't trust Hashem enough. If you really trusted Hashem completely, and the light turned red, it might bother you because you're going to be late somewhere. But then, inside your gut, you would know. Oh, but it's okay because God's in charge of the world. It's okay. It's going to be all right. All I have to do is try. God's going to make everything work out the way that it has to work out. I trust Him 100%. How is that possible for a person? Guess what? It's impossible. You're not going to do it in this lifetime. It's not going to happen. I mean, it might. There might be exceptions, but you know, I think it takes quite a bit of hubris, a truckload of gaiva to imagine that it can happen for me. And that's part of our problem, by the way. The reason that so many people have such horrible self-esteem because of religious insufficiency is because of gaiva, because we assume we should be on such a high madrega, and we hold ourselves to impossible standards deep inside. We should be. I remember when it occurred to me that I'm definitely not going to become the Gadol HaDor. In my first 2 years in yeshiva, I thought that I have a shot at being the next Rebbe Elyashiv, you know? I really thought that. That was an incredibly damaging thing. Now, people say, no, dreams are good. But addicts are not used to the difference between dreams or requests and demands. We don't quite grasp the difference between dreams, requests, and demands and expectations, you know? So I demand and expect this of myself whenever I dream of it, because that's the way I am. I'm an addict. That's how addicts are. So in mele, it becomes a condemnation and a feeling of depression and self-loathing when I realize my true limitations, and I fight those limitations tooth and nail. That's what we call denial. So acceptance leads to self-esteem, and humility leads to self-esteem. Pride destroys our self-esteem because it holds us up to a standard that's completely unrealistic, you know, and it uses religion to do it. So it becomes one of our greatest enemies. It's a very, very bad situation. So, you know, and cool heads need to prevail so that we do the right thing, and Eitzah is needed. That's why we have a fellowship, and that's why every human being is supposed to have friends, O Chavrusa, O Misusa. Without a friend, you have death. Why? Because you need friends to help you through these kinds of things. Anyhow, getting back to the point, I got to say, these bells going on and off really are distracting. It's very hard for me. But God's going to help me out anyway. So if a person really, really had complete trust in God, that everything's going to be fine, it's all on God's plan, and everything's going to be fine, you know, then there would be no stress in life. A person would have no stress. Person would have no deep-seated worries and fears in life, you know. A person would have no deep-seated worries and fears in life. Instead, we have stress. We have worries and fears. We have resentments, You know, we have grudges. You know, we have grudges against God. Why do I have to be so fat? Why do I have to be so poor? Why do I have to have this wife? Why do I have to have these children? Why do I have to be bald? Why do I have to be, you know, too tall? Why do I have to be unloved by everybody around me? Why do I have to be an addict? We have grudges against God. So God needs to be on our fourth step if you consider God a real, quote-unquote, person. If you consider God a real entity, then you can have grudges against him and things that you're upset about what he did and resentments toward God. If he's just a figurehead in your mind and a religious concept out there, then, of course, he doesn't belong on your fourth step. But anyhow, so you can have resentments, right? I mean, we do, you know. We have jealousies and resentments. We have fears of death. You know, a great guy, an addict, was talking to me yesterday, and he shared with me that his father died at the age of whatever it was, 45, and now he's around that age, and he's scared. You know, he's just scared. His father died of cancer, and he's just scared. How do you deal with that? You know, so well. You know, trust God. Hey, you know, if we could really do that, of course, Chesed Yisovenu, we would be surrounded with Chesed. We'd have no problems. No stress. That ain't happening, you know. It ain't happening. All the gums of Latovas that I can say is not going to make that happen. So what do we do? What do we do? So this program has a very simple answer. Program says, well, you can't put yourself in God's hands because of character defects. We got help for you. Don't worry about it. You know, the only thing standing between me and God is me. Okay. Me, like a lot of the Sfarim say, when God creates something, it's really still not there. It's really God. God is still the only thing there. God is still the only relevant thing in the universe. I just seem to exist. I'm in God's mind, you know. But why get all swept off my feet about my little cupcakes and little concerns? You know, we say Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. All those things are supposed to get obliterated, right? You know, and that's part of the mitzvah of Shema Yisrael. Just let all those things go. It's pashtus hagashmias, as the Shulchan Aruch talks about it before tefillah. It's pashtus hagashmias. That's why Shema comes before. That's why Shema comes before Shemon Esrei, because Shema is supposed to lead to his pashtus hagashmias, letting go, just letting go of everything. God is the only act in town. It's the only thing that really matters. You know, him and his will. That's it. You know, so Shmo Uritzono, Shmo, you know, Hu Ushmo Levad. That's all that really matters. We're not there, but if we could let go of all of our character defects, we would be there. So, and if we're there, we have a God. We have a God running our lives. We're secure in him, and we're safe. We're safe because he can give us our sanity, and he can manage our lives. We just need to get out of his way, you know? So, and that's the big point of the program, is getting out of God's way. Like the Kutzker used to say, where can you find God? Where people let him in. That's it. So we need to get out of his way. If we're addicts, a normal person doesn't have to get out of his way. A normal person can do averas and do tshuva. An addict is a person caught in an addict is a person caught. You're like a fish on a line. You're caught. It's just a question of when you're going to get reeled in. That's it. God's the only way out. You know, that's it. Trying won't get you there. God will get you there. Got to get out of his way to make that happen. And that's what the rest of the steps are for. So step 4, 5, 6, 7 is a process of letting go of my character defects. That's getting out of God's way. Why? So that I can have a step 3. Step 8, 9, just another aspect of step 4 through 7. Correcting the damages that I did, getting myself out of this picture. Coming back to zero. You know, I did something wrong, I caused some damage, I'm going to bring it back to zero. My contribution is now gone. I'm out of God's way. You know, step 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, which is a continuation of that. Somebody's got some background noise. No, it's not working. Wherever you are, you unmuted yourself. There's noise in the background. It's like breathing. Wherever you are, you unmuted yourself. Can you help us out, please? Thank you so much. If you have something to comment on, please do.
May I ask you a question?
Yes, sure.
How you doing, Bill? This is Oval. I think you know who I am. Okay, I just have a little question. I'm getting parts of what you're saying, but I just want to understand. I just want to understand for myself. Is step two not on the way to Beiter Bashem? And also part B is I've heard a few times the word Hamanti Kiadaber. If I say it enough times, Hamanti Kiadaber, if I say it enough, act as if, whatever, then I will come to believe. I mean, and the program says act as if also. So two questions. One is the Hamanti Kiadaber, and one is the step two, sort of the beginning of Beiter Hashem.
Okay. I'm sorry that I used, thank you. I'm sorry that I used a vort. Sukkim, vorts, tshuva, none of that stuff is going to help any addict get better. It's all trash. Trash. It doesn't help an addict an iota. It helps a normal person, which is the overwhelming majority of people. It does not help an addict. An addict uses tshuva, becomes a baal tshuva, Hashem lifts him up higher than he was. The gishmak of doing tshuva, there's nothing like it. There's nothing like that pleasure. For anybody, it's Hashem took me back. Ah, it's gishmak. The only thing that comes close to that gishmak is a good orgasm watching porn. So that's what the person ends up doing when he loses the gishmak of tshuva. It's a cycle. For an addict, it's a cycle. They go back and forth. We go back and forth between the gishmak of tshuva and the gishmak of acting out, because we can't have the gishmak of tshuva again until we fall. And the temptation is tremendous to experience Dveikas Bashem. The only way we know to achieve it is to be the baal tshuva who Hashem brings up higher than tzaddikim. So mamela, that's what we strive for without even realizing it. It's unintentional. For the teenager, for the guy who's plotting for your Shemayim and Madregas and Dveikas, I want Dveikas and this. Sexuality, eroticism, orgasm, and all that stuff that comes with it feels like Dveikas. Telling myself, oh, it's fake, it's the Sitra Achare, this doesn't do a hill of beans. It doesn't do anything for me because the experience is there. And it's proven beyond a shadow of a doubt. All the animamins in the world don't come close to what you actually experience with your own body, with your own heart and mind. There's a tremendous pleasure there, a tremendous power there, a feeling vital, and we know it. And from addicts, just go back and forth in that cycle of tshuva acting out, tshuva acting out, tshuva acting out, and it never really ends. I posted about it. It's called the nuclear reset button. It's a terrible option to use to go back to acting out in order to eventually come back to being that sweet baal tshuva, accepted, loved by Hashem kind of thing again. But that's what guys choose inadvertently, not intentionally. That's the direction we go in, and I've been there. That's a cycle going over and over and over. So if someone is not an addict, tshuva is the way to go. Tshuva is the way. Chazal are right. They told us the truth. Tshuva is the way. And there's a path to tshuva. And there are many sfarim that are great, even Bizman Azeh, written to help someone do tshuva. If a person's an addict, though, it ain't going to work because they're sick in the head. It's just not going to work. We are a crazy bunch. We have an allergy, and we cannot be normal. We cannot be normal. We can live normally, but the way to live normally for an addict is not through normal means. The normal means will not work. Ein chavush mater atzmo mibesa asurim. Chizuk is not going to make you change. it'll get you out of habituation, you know, and stuff, but eventually it's going to get you. You're a fish on a line if you're an addict. If it works, then that means you're not an addict, though, okay? So that's fine. But if it's not working for you and you're not having long-term sobriety, it's not working for you. So you may be an addict. So I would just throw away any kinds of hamantis and psukim and any of this. It's just as useless, excuse me, as saying kanani and prizi and mori, blah, blah, blah. It's not going to help you, you know? There's something wrong with me. I'm an addict. There's something wrong with me. I don't need to be convinced that I'm an addict. If someone has to convince me that I'm an addict, then they're doing me a great disservice. Most people who masturbate and look at porn, especially guys who do it, most of them are not addicts. You know? Just because you're from doesn't mean that you must be an addict if you look at porn. That's ridiculous. Most guys are not addicts. It's the guys who see that there's a progression and it makes their lives unmanageable. They cannot stand it anymore. You know? It makes their lives unmanageable. And they keep doing it. And they don't stop. And when they start a little bit, they end up acting out again. You know? The Eitz HaHara works that way. Today do this, tomorrow do that, and the next day it says, Lecha Avodah Avodah Zarah. Yeah, okay, I understand. That's the way it works for everybody. But an addict knows that he's different because he sees that it takes him places where he really doesn't want to go. And he ends up there and you know, or she ends up there. And it gets to a point where a person gets sick and tired of being sick and tired. If you're really sick and tired, stop. That's number one. Nowhere in the steps does it combat addiction directly. The addiction to porn, the alcohol. There's no step that says, oh, God can... So step two doesn't say God can help us stop drinking. Step three doesn't say that if you depend on God, he can stop you from drinking and stuff. That's not what the ikker of the step is. The ikker of the step is, step two says, I'm crazy. I am sick and crazy. I have an allergy that normal people do not have. I have an allergy that normal people do not have. Normal people can do these things. I cannot do these things, you know. Normal people can drink. Alcoholics can't. Normal people can look at schmutz and even masturbate and sin in many ways. I can't. When I do, it makes me meshuggah. It ruins my life. It goes in a cycle. I end up binging. I end up binging frequently, and it wrecks my life. I end up lying and faking to everybody. That's the addict. That's not the person. That person doesn't need tshuva. That person needs probably counseling, therapy, and the steps are offered. You know, the steps are a way that many of us have found works for us. You know, not because the steps give us chizuk and blah, 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 but because the steps allow God to change us so that we become people for whom acting out becomes irrelevant. Alcohol becomes irrelevant for alcoholics. It's not that they get the strength to resist it. I have no strength to resist porn. You know, I'm a different kind of a person now, but I could change back into the same person that I was when I left off by just making one phone call, you know, to a sex line or opening up watching a dirty movie, you know, even one scene in a dirty movie, you know, because I'm an addict. I'm different. I'm not the person that Chazal are talking about. That, you do tshuva and this, remember Yom HaMisa, it's not going to work. It's not going to work. You know, for me, because I'm an addict. For a normal person, yes, it will work. Chazal tell the truth. You know, but they're not talking about addicts. That's pashut. So, I mean, I relate myself to Paro, not to the Jews. That's a whole other story. We'll talk about that. Paro just was addicted to his Jews. He kept telling Moshe Rabbeinu, no, wait, another thing. Who's going to go? Pray for me, please. I'm going to die. Hasherim many rakas, I'm loves, you know. And then he back to his way. And then he sees the Yamsuf, and he goes, go, go. He loses everything until finally he hits rock bottom. He loses everything.
The frog syndrome.
Yes, exactly. You boil them boil them nice and slow. Anyway, so thank you. So I want to get back to the main to the main thing. That step three. This is not about resisting temptation. That's irrelevant for an addict. It's surrender. Addicts in Alcoholics Anonymous and in SA don't talk about resisting temptation. They talk about surrendering temptation. And it doesn't talk about that in the steps, because the steps aren't about resisting or even surrendering temptation. The steps don't mention alcohol after the first line in the first step. There's not a single mention of alcohol or addiction anywhere, because you can't work on your addiction. You know, it's surrender. That's the only thing that works, surrender. I give up the fight completely. I cannot fight this fight. I can't fight this fight. My job is something that has nothing to do with this fight. What's my job? Tell me. Oh, sanity? That's all steps two says, sanity. It doesn't say strength, fighting your desire, no, sanity. Oh, sanity is something. How do I get more sanity? Oh, step three, God can restore my sanity. Step three, teach me how to put myself into God's care. You know, He'll restore my sanity. And then drinking becomes irrelevant. I mean, and I can get involved in life, you know. Teach me how. Okay, we'll teach you how. Step four, five, six, seven. That's how you let go of yourself. I let go of myself, and I allow God into my life how do I give myself into God's care? How? There's only one way that 12 steps talks about, and that is steps 4, 5, 6, and 7. All the third step prayers in the world won't do it. And there's a beautiful third step prayer. God, I offer myself to you to build with me and to do with me as you know best. Please relieve me of my bondage to self so that I can do your will better. Please take away my difficulties so that victory over them, you take away my difficulties so that victory over them bears witness to those I would help of your love, your power, and your Torah, or your way of living. May I do your will always. You know? All the third step prayers in the world will not give you what you need, will not give you a third step. The only thing that's going to give you, if you're a normal human being, at least, besides an addict, will give you, the only thing that will give you your third step is one thing, and that is steps 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Nothing else. Because it's the only thing that Mesech HaMavdil Beinenu Levein HaKadosh Baruch Hu for an addict is our character defects. That's the Mesech HaMavdil. That's what needs to be removed for success. And the only way to get ourselves out of his way, to get our character defects out so that we get out of God's way, because we're literally standing in his way, clearly, is the only way to get out of his way is to, and put ourselves in his hands, really put ourselves in his hands, is by losing our character defects one by one. You know, that's step 4, 5, 6, and 7. You know, 8 and 9 are part of that. Step 10 is ongoing, step 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9, mainly 8 and 9, but also 4, 5, 6, and 7. Step 11 is seeking to connect myself to God and his will. Brim Jews have an easy time with that. We have the Torah. God speaks to us through the Torah. You know, you hear Christians say all the time, well, I didn't know what to do, and then I thought and I prayed and God told me this and God told me that. And Bill writes in the 12 and 12, oy vavoy, we hear these religious guys, he's talking about his fellow Christians, religious guys talking about, well, God told me to do this, God told me to do that. An addict has the right to know what God told him. What, you heard a voice in your head, you're a nubby all of a sudden? Our personal desires twist what we want all the time. Come on. You know, we know that. And they twist our perspective. You don't know what God's telling you. But Jews should have it easy. We have the Torah, Kedosha, God speaking to you in the Torah. You know, look in the Torah for what to do. Halavai, it should be so easy. You know, so you can have a Rebbe. That makes it a lot easier, you know. But guess what? How many addicts are there who have not told their quote-unquote rebbes about their addictive behaviors in detail. They say, "Oi, Rebbe, I have a problem with Shmir Seinayim." You know, "Oi, Rebbe, I have a problem with Zera Levatola. Zera Levatola makes it sound like it happens in my sleep." You know what I mean? "Oh, well, but no, my Rebbe knows what I mean." That's not good enough. If you want to ask a shaila in halacha, you have to give all the pratim. Same thing in hashkafa. Same thing in hadracha, even more so. You need the whole pratim. You can't rely on the Rebbe figuring out what you mean. If you're driving around the block with your underwear, you know, with your pants down your knees, and you don't tell your Rebbe, you just tell your Rebbe that you're masturbating sometimes. "Oi, I said the M word. Oi, that's enough. That was so hard. Oi." You know, but you don't tell him the truth. You know? You didn't ask the shaila. Your Rebbe doesn't know you yet. You got to tell, if you want hadracha from a Rebbe in what the Torah is telling you to do, you got to tell the Rebbe all the truth. And if the Rebbe has no clue what addiction is, you'll know, because he'll just go crazy when you tell him this stuff. And you'll end up not being able to tell him the rest of it because of his reaction to the tip of the iceberg, you know? Now, when I did my call, the Desperados call on Guard Your Eyes the first time about 8 years ago, it was after, 7 years ago, it was after posting for like a year on Guard Your Eyes and getting to know all these guys from the old forum. You know, remember way back in the day, Momo, you know, and all these guys. Way back, 10, 12 years ago, you know, so they were posting on Guard Your Eyes about, oh, you know, "I admit I do this, I admit I do that, I admit it all and this, and I want to get better," and they were admitting all this stuff on the forum, you know, of course using M with an asterisk for masturbation and P with an asterisk for, I'm not sure what that word really stood for, I don't know, potatoes maybe, but anyway, so like, you know, it's like, and guess what, about 10 guys joined this call that we did, which was a closed line call. Closed line call. And they knew no one else was listening. Their wives can't be listening. Their friends can't be listening. The public can't be listening. No one can get this PIN number. So they knew that it was secret. They were safe. It's just us, you know? And I asked them to tell over, to write down and tell and share, if they want, their story with the group after I wrote down and shared my story in detail, clearly and honestly, with the group, okay? And many of them did. And every single one of the guys who had been posting about MNP on Guard Your Eyes forum for a year, you know, admitted things in their stuff that they had been doing kaseder that were way beyond what they had been admitting online. The details of it were way, way beyond. When you hear the details, you realize, oh my goodness, this guy is a whole heck of a lot sicker than he was letting on in all his quote-unquote honesty online. And that's an honesty, by the way. The honesty online should be the most honesty, right? Because number one, he's not using his real name. Number two, no one can find out who he is. He's in his home hiding behind the comfort of his own computer. No one will get to know him, right? So he should be the most honest, right? No, it makes sense. If no one knows you now, you can be the most honest with no fear whatsoever. But they were not honest. They became more honest when they got into a room with real people who were all serious about their own thing and ready to be honest about themselves, you know? Had it been behind the computer, they could never be completely honest. Because even their full honesty, if they could say all the things that they did, it wouldn't be honesty, because honesty to nobody isn't really honesty, after all. That's just the way that it is. The experience is not the same at all. And it was such an eye-opener for me. It had never occurred to me that that could be the case, that guys could be posting for a year or more saying details and yet saying that they were saying the truth and saying that they were being honest and yet not being honest and not telling the truth, you know, omitting the ikker. The ikker was chaser min ha-sefer, the ikker, because the crazy behaviors were the ones that were really driving them crazy, not the sperm coming out. That wasn't the thing that was driving them crazy. It was everything else. It was everything around it, you know. But they could point to the Avera and say, this is the problem, and it's a complete lie. The Avera wasn't the problem. the demeaning, disgusting behavior that they were doing against their own will repeatedly. That was what was driving them crazy, not the Avera, you know? So that's very precious. So again, the schematic, to me, is very important here, because it gives the concept of the 12 steps all in a unified fashion. One, two, three are my problem. Uh-oh, that's one. And it's not just sex. It's not just porn. It's not just lust. It's not just that. My problem is also that my life can't continue this way, and it's messed up in other areas. I'm faking and lying in other areas as well to cover for this, and I'm you know, I'm not the father that people think I am. I'm not the man people think I am. I'm not even the husband that my wife thinks I am. That's a huge problem. That's unmanageable. That's crazy. And in other ways, my life is unmanageable and crazy, perhaps. That's one. Two is admitting that I'm crazy, that my problem is not addiction. My problem is really insanity, and lacking sanity in some degree, and that I need a power greater than myself, like Chazal saying, Chovash Matarat's Moment Beis Asurim. You know, you can't fix yourself with your own insane mind. Number three, a suggestion that God, two is a suggestion that God can restore us to sanity, or at least a higher power can, and that it is possible. You can look around and see people getting better if you come to any AA meeting, and which is highly recommended, by the way, by me. If you think you're an addict, go to AA meetings. At least if you can't go to another fellowship regarding sexual stuff, at least go to AA meetings. Because you'll find sobriety there, probably. Or at least you'll start to. Step three is, well, dependence on God. Dependence, yes, the big D. Dependence on God can save me. Because I can get myself out of his way and allow him to manage my life. The problem is, you can't get a third step without getting out of his way. And the only thing that's in his way is my character defect. And the only way to get those character defects that the program talks about is steps 4 through 10. That's it. Steps 4 through 10. And the purpose of steps 4 through 10 is one thing, to get a third step. And the battle, so to speak, of our lives, the struggle of our lives as addicts in recovery is one thing, getting a third step. Do you have a God today? Do you have a God of your very own today? And it might change over the course of the day. And that's the only thing, that's why the third step is the crux of the entire program. It's all there really is an honest relationship with your own God. That's all that there is in the program. And how do we get an honest relationship with our own God? By getting out of his way through letting go of our character defects one at a time. And the program's way of losing the character defects, this is the program's way, okay, is different than psychological, cognitive behavioral training or other psychological methods and all this other stuff. They help and they may work. Medication, they help and they may work. The program's contribution to that effort is, I think, a very beautiful one. It's through further dependence on God. It's an amazing thing. It's not saying this is the only way to do it. This book is meant to be suggestive only. We're not saying you must do it this way or else you'll never make it. Don't worry, you'll be back. A guy's got to get off his high horse to say that. You know, we don't know. We know this works for us. You do step 4 through 7 with trust in God, you'll probably lose your character defense piece by piece. And you'll get out of God's way, and you'll feel a God of your very own in your life, And if you have a God of your very own in your life can be managed by him. And he'll do a job that's far better than anything you're going to do, as you proved in your first step, which is the entire engine that drives the program, is the first step, And the biggest issue in the first step isn't, oh, my addiction. It's, I'm powerless over alcohol. I'm powerless over lust. Unlike a normal person, I am powerless over it. A normal person can enjoy these things and do these things. I can't. When I do them, they get way out of hand, and they make my life crazy. You know? Somebody's not on mute. If you have something to say, please go ahead and say it, or hit star six if you don't mind. Please, I'm encouraging people to comment and through the whole call. I know I talk too much. I apologize, but if you want to say something, go for it. No? I feel kind of guilty. Okay, so steps four, five, six, and seven, and eight, and nine, and ten are really just ways to get the third step again. That's all. 11, like I said, is connecting to God's will better, through prayer and meditation, which are recognized by everyone, including, of course, Eden, as being a wonderful way to get God's thoughts into your head. Chazal didn't just say pray. Chazal gave us a formula. They gave us a Shmoneh Esrei. They gave us Korbanos. They gave us Shema. They gave us everything. They said, these are the things to say in the morning, in the afternoon, in the evening. These are the things to say when you go to sleep at night. These are the things to say when you wake up in the morning. These are the things to say before you eat food and after you eat food, after you go to the bathroom. These are things to say all over the place in your life if you want awareness of God in your life. You know, so it's great. We're lucky. We're lucky. You know? One more thing I just want to throw in before I quit. Along the lines of the first step a little bit as an introduction to it, because we're going to focus a little more on the first step next call. We won't have to spend much time on two, and then we can move to three, God willing, in the call after that, I hope. But I just want to clarify that a lot of people think that the sex addict, for example, is the guy that sits on the street corner and goes, "Hey, baby," when women walk by. You know, look at that mushkus. He's a pervert. You know, he's a sex addict. You know, look at him. And the women walk by and he whistles. You know, it's not the truth. Okay, the guys who get Playboy magazine delivered to their house, you know, and they leave it out on their coffee table for people who come over to see it, they're not sex addicts usually. Usually these are just, okay, they're mishkasim and this, okay, fine, but they're not addicts. They're not sex addicts. They're enjoying it, just like many people enjoy alcohol. They enjoy alcohol. Come on. You think everybody who farbrengs and gets drunk 15 times a year is, it's all the shem shemayim? He enjoys the buzz of alcohol. Come on. And it may be okay. He may not be an alcoholic. I don't know. You know, there's a lot of people that drink every football game. They don't get drunk out of their minds. They're Americans. And I like having a glass of wine with dinner sometimes. You know? I like having a beer with my Shabbos Seuda and sometimes even a dinner during the week. Am I an alcoholic? I don't think so. You know? You can enjoy alcohol and not be an alcoholic. You know? And the same, and this guy's enjoying women walking by. He gets a kick out of it. The sexaholic is the guy standing behind him who's so ashamed when the woman turns around and he looks down, but then as she turns around to walk away, he's staring at her backside and going out of his mind at how beautiful it is. And then he takes that image home with him, and he struggles with it, you know, quote unquote. He struggles with the big struggle of not giving in. It's just such a big deal for him. The other guy sees another woman walk by, okay, congratulations, there's another pretty woman, whistle at her, get it over with, and move on. That's not a sexaholic. That's a jerk, you know, but it's not a sexaholic. Not to say that sexaholics can't be jerks too, but, you know, I've been plenty jerky in my day, but and I still am sometimes. But anyway, the sexaholic is the guy who hides it, you know, and acts like he's all ashamed and stuff, you know, and yet he carries it around with him, and he doesn't forget. He sees a movie, and the two scenes he remembers are the ones where she got naked. That guy's a sexaholic, okay? That guy's a sexaholic, not the guy who's looking at schmutz all the time, necessarily, you know, who has schmutz all around and goes to dirty movies. Most Americans, they go to these R-rated movies. They make $85 million a week, you know, or something like that, and they're R-rated movies with schmutz in them and stuff, they're all sexaholics? You've got to be kidding. They're all sexaholics? Come on. Whether they're firm or not, that doesn't make them a sexaholic. A mushkas? Perhaps. Oh, yeah. But a sex, but an addict? No, I don't think so. An addict is the guy, like me, who goes to psychology class in college, Nebuch, and the teacher asks, anybody here ever see an X-rated movie? Because he was talking about abnormal behavior, including perverted whatever they call them, deviants, right? Deviant sexual behaviors. He was covering that topic in class. Anybody here ever see an X-rated movie? Hands go up. The whole class, practically, hands go up. My hand didn't go up. My hand didn't go up. Did it? No way. You know? Oh, I'm a good little firm guy. You know, but I go in the shower and, you know, fantasize my brains out with masturbation. If there's a dirty magazine, I would take it home and treasure it like gold. When on my first contact with schmutz, I felt immediately the beauty and the power in it. That's an addict. To see it, enjoy it, and it's nice, that's normal. To see it and feel, this is gold, I got to have more of this, that's an addict, you know, in my case, you know. So the yid who says, oh, it's disgusting, it's disgusting, it's disgusting, it's terrible, but in the meantime, he's still using it. Why is he using it if it's so disgusting? Because it must have such beauty in it that it's even more beautiful than it is disgusting. He would do better to admit to another human being who's safe, to admit to him how beautiful it is to him. Admit the truth, buddy. You're crazy. This is beautiful. Your mind, your seichel tells you that it's disgusting, but your heart says it's the most beautiful thing you've ever seen. Can you think of anything more beautiful? No. Well, then it's the most beautiful thing you've ever seen, and you love it. Admit it. That's not going to make you use it more. It's going to make you admit who you are, you know, and what you are. And it's going to bring you onto the path to get fixed up. But denying it and saying, Eretz Achiti Emori Prizi, it's disgusting, you know, ugh, it's disgusting, Shakes to Shakzenu, you know, da-da-da, it's just denial of who you are. It's just playing a little game. It's like dressing up on Halloween, you know. It's just dressing yourself up because you're still secretly dying to see it again, dying to see it again. You know, not going to get better that way. So who's the addict, you know? I just wanted to cover that. One small vignette. Is it getting close to this? It's about 13 after 1 again. I'm sorry. One short vignette I want to end with. I was maybe 13, 14 years old. I was in a barber shop in Queens, of all places. And there was a guy there who I knew from shul. He had a little, you know, kippah sugah on his head. And there he was sitting there. And I was trying to be good. Of course, I was very busy at home masturbating and you know, off hours, you know, and almost every shower was torture, quote unquote. And I was, you know, already in the throes of this whole thing. This guy, and I'm sitting in the barbershop, and there's dirty magazines all over the barbershop, in this barbershop, which in many barbershops, at least back in those days, that was normal. Maybe it still is, I don't know. I don't look now. anyway, and I only go to firm barbershops now. So the guy is sitting there, and there's a dirty magazine sitting there, and he's waiting for his turn, and I'm waiting for my turn. He's sitting 3 seats away from me, 4 seats away from me, whatever, and he picks up a schmutz magazine, and he starts looking at the pictures, you know, reading it, looking at the pictures. Probably more looking at the pictures than reading it, but anyway. And I'm shocked and amazed. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. Could not believe what I was seeing. Here's a guy with his yarmulke on. And he's looking at this schmutz. Isn't he ashamed? But I knew that inside my heart, I knew I was jealous. Like, I wish I could get away with that. You know, I put myself in his place after a while, after going crazy about, oh, how dare you? I'm dying to look at that stuff. I wish I could do what you're doing. I wish no one was around. Then I'd be rummaging through all the magazines looking for the best image over and over, trying to find the best image, you know, the best picture, exactly what I want to see. And like drooling, like it would, my mouth would be dry, my hands would be cold and shaking. If you're addicts, you know exactly what I'm referring to. And I'd be looking for the best picture. And I just couldn't believe that he's getting away with this, at the same time that I was shocked that he had the guts to do it. And it's crazy. Like, aren't you ashamed? It's disgusting. Aren't you ashamed? Then the guy says, next. And he looks up, sees the barber, says, oh, yeah, puts the magazine down and walks over to get his hair cut. And I thought to myself, my immediate reaction in my gut reaction was, what? How did you do that? If he would have called me, I would have ignored him, hoping that someone else would get up and go take his go to him so that I could have a longer time with this chayra here. This is like, how could you pull yourself away from it like that? Like it's nothing. That's when I look back at that story, I realized this guy wasn't an addict at all. He was just a guy looking at a gentleman's magazine. You know, gentleman's magazine isn't another name for addict's magazine. It's another name for, oh, it's not disgusting. It's not exploitation of women. It's okay. You know, enjoy it. That's all it is. For me, it's code for you know, kesef zakuk shivasayim, you know? Kesef tsaruf. You know, zahav, haz, you know? The best gold that there is. You know, it's also the joke, adult bookstore. It's the most immature thing. These are five-year-old boys, like, you know, they're like 11-year-old boys running around, hey, penis, you know, na, 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 na. And it's called adult bookstore. Naked ladies, adult bookstore. There's nothing adult about it. And the guys, you know, most of the guys who go to adult bookstores, they're addicts, because that's already a shameful act. Going into a business that says, you know, naked people and stuff on the cover, what kind of normal person would do that, you know? That's crazy already, you know? So most of the people going in there are addicts, probably, I would imagine. And there's nothing adult about it. It's like most advertising, it's false advertising. Anyway, so that vignette stuck with me, and I realized what a difference there is between him and me, you know? I wouldn't have done the first thing that he did, and I wouldn't have done the second thing that he did. I wouldn't have picked it up, and I wouldn't have put it down if I had picked it up, you know? So, look, Guard Your Eyes is dedicated to helping Yidden the world over find freedom from schmutz, period. Not from schmutz addiction, from schmutz, you know, from the habit of looking at schmutz. Among those people, there's a small percentage of addicts among us who are looking at schmutz, of schmutz addicts. And thank God for Guard Your Eyes. It gives addicts to schmutz a Pesach to find help, you know? But I think it's essential for us to know ourselves, to know yourself. Are you a normal guy or woman with a sex addiction, you know, with a sexual desires, and you're fighting it and you need etzes? Open up to your rabbanim who you're close to. Tell them the truth. Make sure that they're safe. And tell them the truth and use them. Get the hadracha from frum psychologists who can help you. They are frum psychologists all over who can help us. But if you're an addict, it's another story. It's just another story. It may work for you, but the 12 steps may be the missing ingredient. Like my therapist, who I came to, when I acted out the last time on Erev Rosh Chodesh Adar 18 years ago, I realized I had been to 4 shrinks and 3 rabbanim already, at least, and told, you know, 2 of the 4 shrinks and 2 of the rabbanim, I told them all the details of everything, you know, that I could at the time. And none of them helped me. None of them knew what to say, not the shrinks and not the rabbis. You know, they didn't know what to say. One of them told me the right thing. You're a very sick man and you need help. You really need professional help, Dov. You know? And that was a year before I came into recovery, you know. And from the time that I came into recovery, I haven't lost my sobriety according to SA's sobriety definition. I've looked at porn a few times, you know. I've started listening to phone sex stuff a few times in my second and third year. I remember I had a really rough time around that time. Worked hard with my sponsor on things that I needed to work on, which was mainly surrendering earlier, and came clean with my wife, and things have changed drastically to the better, you know. And thank God, you know, since then it's been great, you know. Before that it was great too, but it was uncomfortable, you know. Now it's great and only sometimes uncomfortable, thank God. It has to be uncomfortable. The improvement only comes through pain, some pain. Growth only comes through some pain. But, you know, thank God it hasn't been excruciating, you know. And, you know, so thank God for Guard Your Eyes. But people need to know themselves. And we can't use what works for normals if we're not normal, no matter how good it makes us feel. And if we're not abnormal and we try to use the 12 steps, it tends to kind of water it down for the people in the 12 steps. You know, it gets very confusing for people, very confusing. You know, I'm a guy in recovery. I'm a firm guy. I'm in recovery. And I'm, you know, wading through the flotsam and jetsam of people, you know, who are addicts and aren't addicts in recovery, injecting all kinds of foreign ideas that have nothing to do with recovery into the picture. And, you know, I'm treading water and things are pretty good, you know. But we need Hashem's help, you know. We need to daven continuously for surrender and help, letting go, and working, you know, the steps. You know, it's indispensable for me. I wanted to give the schematic today of the steps and show that as best I could how the first three steps are not even focused really on the drinking and sobriety, but rather on sanity and unmanageability of my life, not my addiction, but my life, and how the third step answers that, or proposes an answer that God can manage our lives better than we can. And as firm Jews, that should be obvious. Oh-ho! But it's not. Because most of us do not trust God, no matter how firm we are. We don't. And coming to terms with that exactly and clearly and honestly is the only way out, you know. But the real problem isn't that we don't trust God. The real problem is, usually, even after we trust God, is that we have character defects. You know, we insist on managing our own lives through anger, resentment, manipulation, lying, striking out, controlling other people, controlling our children, you know, our spouses. And it's all because of our character defects. So steps 4 through 7 are there for one purpose, to give us a third step. That's it. That is how we put God at the helm, simply by letting go of the wheel and moving over and sitting in the co-pilot's chair, or whatever you want to call it, you know? Maybe the passenger chair, I don't know. You know, sitting in another chair, let him run my life. You know? And that's only done by character defects leaving, you know? Kind of like roadkill, as far as I know. At least that's the part the program plays. Many of us need counseling and medication as well, but many of us don't, you know. Many alcoholics, sexaholics, and drug addicts, and gamblers, and et cetera, you know, found sobriety without counseling and or medication. But many of us find sobriety with those things helping us, and I think that's great, you know. I, for myself, tried the medication and the counseling, and it didn't help me, you know, after 20 years of trying Yiddish, you know, and still now in recovery, I see that nobody has the answer for me that the 12 steps and the 12-step culture has for me, nobody. Because the answer here is so beautiful, so beautiful. It's a learned dependence on God, and it's learned dependence on God for the things, to remove the things that are taking away our dependence on God, through my character. It's a constant renewal of my relationship, my love affair, my relationship with God. You know, my own God, which Ritzvi Meir Zilberberg and the Bill Vavi Mishkan Ebner person, Rabbi Tamar Schwartz, and many other people just constantly harp on. God has to be your own God. He can't be the God of the Yud Gimel Ikrim and the God of the Yud Gimel Midos and the God of the books. It's your own personal God. That's the only thing that matters in Yiddishkeit. And for an addict in recovery, we got it easy because we have to have a God of our very own or else we die. You know? We're the luckiest segment of humanity. No question. To me. Luckiest segment of humanity. Because we have to find God. Our own God. You know? And the Ribbono Shel Olam is my own God. You know? One day at a time. I don't know if he'll be my God tomorrow. I don't know. But, you know, and one day at a time. Anyway, so next call, what I'd like to do is I'd like to cover questions on what I've said until now and what other guys have piped in with a couple of times until now. I'd like to start with that. If I can, and then move on to cover two and start step three, Ezra Hashem. Okay, I'm going to shut the recording off, and then people who want to can ask questions. I have a couple of minutes. Excuse me.